polyester is the largest problem, and it's the largest problem because of a number of different things. One is the fact that it is the fiber that's the most dominant. 56% of all textile fibers are made out of polyester today. It's also one that is problematic because it does not degrade naturally in our environment. So we need to find a way to actually regenerate that fiber if we want to take care of it better. And today, so far, the technology has not been available to be able to do that at scale.
Hello, everybody. Emma here, your host of the Interline podcast. Today, I'm talking to Patrick Frisk, the CEO of Reju, a company working to recycle polyester at unprecedented speed and scale to keep up with the fashion industry's consumption of it. Owned by Technip Energies, an engineering and technology company, Reju's polyester is made from 100% textile waste that would be buried or burned, with no bottle chips used, in theory making it completely traceable and helping to build a more open supply chain. Patrick has spent decades working for brands including Under Armour, The North Face, Timberland, and Vans. Even before the rise of fast fashion, he noticed that too many of these garments were ending up in landfills or incinerated. This drove him and his co-founders to use their expertise, their knowledge of the apparel industry, and their understanding of organizational frameworks to find new ways to use the materials clothing is made of when it reaches the end of its useful life. Reju's mission is applying this philosophy to polyester, which is one of the biggest sustainability challenges, as it remains the most widely used type of synthetic fiber in the world, at a time when synthetic usage continues to grow. In this episode, Patrick and I unpack the massive undertaking of recycling textiles on an industrial scale, what it will take to find traction and industry buy-in, why other institutions may have failed, and why Reju's modus operandi is different, and lastly, what the ideal longer-term vision is for textile-to-textile recycling and the circular economy. Let's get started. Today on the Interline podcast, we have Mr. Patrick Frisk of Reju, and it's such a pleasure to have him on here to speak about his career and his experience with the company, and we're so excited to have you on here, Patrick, so thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So can we get started with you telling us a little bit about your career and what led you to be the CEO of Reju?
Absolutely. So I've had the opportunity to work inside of the textile, footwear, and accessory business for over 35 years. And in my last 20 or so, I've had the opportunity to lead some very fantastic global brands like The North Face, Timberland, Vans, Under Armour, and others. I did start my career actually in this industry in the fabric business, working for W.L. Gore and Associates, the makers of Gore-Tex. So what is maybe a little bit unique about my career is the fact that I've actually worked across the categories as well as, initially with the fabric, which is not normally common. You normally would tend to start in a category and then kind of end up there in your career. But I've had the opportunity to do many things, and that has eventually led me here to Reju today, which is now a new type of adventure for me in terms of my career, where I'm trying to help move the textile industry into the next phase, which means that we need to think more thoughtfully about the things that we extract from the planet and how we then integrate them into our supply chain, and ultimately also provide an opportunity to potentially regenerate them when they find their end of life stage.
Absolutely, such an important cause, and I guess if anybody is going to succeed in it, it is somebody like you with your vast experience in all these different areas of your career. I wanted to ask you next specifically about polyester textile waste. As you will know, it's one of the biggest sustainability challenges that we face in the fashion industry. Something like over 60 million tons of polyester fibers are produced annually, and less than 1% of
global textile waste is recycled into new fibers for clothing. And that actually is a statistic from 2021. So I think it could even have become worse since then. Not to be negative, because you've chosen that to tackle, actually. And can you give me some insight into why it is that you picked polyester, despite the things, or should I say, considering the things I've just said? Are there more reasons? And what level of scalability do you see as possible, as well as the time frame for that?
Polyester is the largest problem, and it's the largest problem because of a number of different things. One is the fact that it is the fiber that's the most dominant. 56% of all textile fibers are made out of polyester today. It's also one that is problematic because it does not degrade naturally in our environment. So we need to find a way to actually regenerate that fiber if we want to take care of it better. And today, so far, the technology has not been available to be able to do that at scale in an economic way. So there are certainly ways that you can break down polyester, many different ways you can break down polyester. But the trick is to make sure that you can do it at scale, and you can also do it economically. But that's not enough. You also need to make sure that you can separate the polyester from other things. And that's particularly difficult in textiles. You know, we use tens of thousands of different chemicals in textiles. And when I say textiles, we tend to, I guess, automatically go to things that we know well, like apparel. But the reality is, you know, polyester fibers exist in everything from carpets to airline interiors, car interiors, bedding. For example, most mattress covers in the world are polyester, 100% polyester. So it isn't just in the most obvious things like garments. It's across everything. And therefore, also such an urgent problem for us, because if it isn't naturally degrading, and if we're not able to yet do it at scale, what that means is that you either have to dig it into the ground or burn it or when it's found its end of life. And that is, of course, a big problem for us, because the amount that we today either incinerate put into landfill is over 85% of all textiles. So if that's going to continue, not only are you extracting a finite a product, which is oil, right, to make polyester, you're also creating a massive waste problem on the other side that is going to be one of the things that I think is really going to make people wake up is the fact that there's just so much waste. So we have a societal problem in front of us in terms of what to do with all this waste, because we continue to consume more and more and more textile every year. We've doubled the consumption essentially in terms of apparel from 2000 till today. And the predictions right now is that it looks like we're going to pretty much double again by 2040. And that's only 16 years away. So it's an urgent problem, but the problem so far has been our inability to actually do regeneration at scale, specifically with polyester.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot of people, including myself, forget sometimes that it's not just clothes. It is things that you mentioned. It's bed sheets. It's a whole range of things that are easy to forget about. And so going back to what I asked, what is the time frame actually for solving this crisis, and how is it possible to achieve scalability? Obviously, that's what you're working on. Yet, do you think we're going to be able to make a difference by 2040, or is it longer than that?
Well, we have to get started, and I think to really illustrate why there should be a sense of urgency, the textile industry has basically gotten a free ride on infrastructure that has been built for other things. And what I mean by that is, today, you know, we extract oil, we put that oil into a pipeline that creates many different types of products. So the infrastructure to create polyester basically goes through this infrastructure that's existed now for over half a century or so. And it's a very efficient, highly inexpensive because of the ability to leverage that infrastructure. And it's fast. It's relatively fast. We've also built these very large polyester factories to take care of this product that's coming flowing through the pipes, so to speak, in a very efficient manner. Now, if you're going to do something different, which is to take waste and now turn that waste into raw material instead of using oil, you actually have to then, of course, put it through a different system, a different infrastructure build, if you like. And the problem we have as a society today is the fact that it does not exist. We do not aggregate textile waste separately at scale anywhere in the world. We do not sort it for fiber. We sort it for wearability, in other words, for reuse and resell, which is great. And it's very, very needed, of course. But to actually sort it for fiber, you need to actually build very large facilities that actually doesn't look at the style so much as looks at what is the composition of this garment, carpet, bedding, whatever it might be. And so that we can then sort it into the right piles for regeneration. And then ultimately, you need to also be building a regeneration center. In other words, a place where you take this textile once it's been both sorted for fiber and where you removed all of the disruptors, things like zippers and buttons and what have you, into the raw textile. And then you can start the regeneration process. You need to build these factories to be able to do that, or as we call them, regeneration hubs. And they are very large and very, very costly. So it's a quest to really build this infrastructure that needs to begin. And you need to do that over a period of time. So to answer your question, will we be there in 2040? Well, I can tell you it's going to take time. So this is a generational thing in terms of how to think about this. So we have to get going with it because of what you started by talking about, the amount of polyester that's made every year. That's every year. To build a new infrastructure system, we're talking about decades. So to tell you that we will be having solved this problem by 2040, I think would be incredibly optimistic. But I do believe that we have to have a sense of urgency to get going with it, because if we don't, it will be a waste crisis beyond what I think anybody realizes today very, very shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to make anyone panic, but it's true. It's absolutely true. And I want to talk a little bit about technology now. During your time at Under Armour, you were inspired by the technology which IBM pioneered that could separate polyester fibers from other clothing materials in experiments. This sounds easy, but I think it's actually not really as easy as it sounds. And before, you and I have also spoken about your work with Technip Energies, and they had a vision on how to sort of scale this technology. So now Riju is working with Technip, who uses Volcat, which is that IBM technology produced with Under Armour. And can you tell me a little bit more about how big a role technology has played, in the idea and the vision of Riju? And do you think it's necessary to have a tech company actually backing every fashion startup today with big ambitions to do something in the recycling space or elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, because I think we began a little bit here talking about the infrastructure and the things that need to be built to facilitate this new system that is composed of an ecosystem of players, right, that need to work together to facilitate the system. And when we started looking at this at Under Armour, we had a very big target ahead of us in terms of how we thought about using recycled material. But as I learned more and as the team learned more, we also realized that the source that was being used, which was predominantly bottles and still is predominantly bottles in terms of the regenerated polyester that does exist out there today, and there's quite vast amounts of recycled polyester that is used from bottles, we realized that that probably was not sustainable because ultimately the bottle industry needs to have their recycled bottle material back to use it for new bottles themselves. And we saw that, you know, we were going to be a growth company. We would need more and more of this, and we would need to wean ourselves off the virgin to get more recycled. But preferably, we'd like to do it with textile because ultimately that was what we were producing. And we were looking across the world for a technology. We found this technology with IBM that was in its early phases. They, at that point in time, were looking more at the bottling industry. We made them perhaps a little bit more aware that there was an opportunity with textiles. And Technip also got involved, and the three of us together began a journey to try to understand whether textiles was actually an opportunity for this technology. Fast forward to 2023, where we together created a company called Reju. That's 100% owned by Technip Energy. So Technip decided to really pull ahead and explore how this technology could be commercialized, which is the process that we're in right now. And the reason we did that was because we believe that this technology has the ability to do what is so hard, which is separate the polyester out from the textile, and to be able to do that at scale. So we are not focusing on bottles or packaging or any of the things that many other brand, companies are trying to solve for. We're focused on the most difficult, which is textile. And we're doing that because we believe our technology can do it at scale. But to build it out a little bit more and answer your question, it isn't just possible to be successful by just having a technology. And the reason for that is because you have to actually make sure that you turn what is today, you know, textile into a new raw material at scale so that you can build factories at scale. Because what you're competing against, right, remember, is virgin polyester predominantly, which is now today refined in a very sophisticated, efficient, tried, true, and tested pipeline, if you like, of infrastructure. So you need the technology, but you also need the ability to help participate and build this infrastructure. And therefore, being owned by a very large and incredibly competent engineering company helps us not just do what we need to do to build our own regeneration hubs or factories, but it also helps our partners because we understand some of the stuff that they will need to go to build out, for example, sorting facilities or how to think about logistics and aggregation of waste and all of the other things that are so critical to make this actually a system. And I think that is why nobody has been able to necessarily do it before, is because it is complex. It involves many different partners. It's an ecosystem. And therefore, having the not just the technology, but having the capability to build out the technology and to continue to engineer the actual process. So at Technip, we have not only building engineers, we also have chemical engineers. And Technip is a very unique company in that sense. We have a polymer division at Technip called Tensimer, and we today have built an enormous amount of polyester plants through the last 70 years that the Simmer Group has been, Tensimer has been active, and therefore know a lot about polyester in itself. So being able to regenerate polyester through Reju and then work with Tensimer, our parent company, Technip Energy is one of the divisions, to actually make polyester better is the other endeavor that we're doing. So for us, it is so helpful to be owned by somebody that's an engineering company because of that reason. You need not just the technology, you need the technical expertise to build it out. And in our case with Reju, we also have the textile experts to help downstream when we start to talk about integrating this into the brands as well. So people like myself, having worked, you know, a lifetime in the industry, we have many others in our organization that are also experts in yarn and fabrics and what have you, because once we've done our job of regeneration and we have the polyester back in its pure form, we need to also then integrate it into the supply chain of the brand so that they can make new things. And that's also something we believe we can help improve. You know, there's an opportunity for us to actually make recycled, not necessarily a something that feels like something not premium or not as good. We believe, you know, regeneration is all about rejuvenation. So in other words, because we have this expertise, we also know that we can build better yarns and better fabrics that shed less microplastics, use less bad chemicals, and actually are able to contribute to a better sustainability journey in their second life. So why not make the second life better than the first if we can?
Yeah, absolutely. What a complicated process, though. It's well, yeah. Thank you for taking on that role, because I do think that it's something that everybody has to buy into, and it's really not something simple. And having the expertise that you've just mentioned now is going to be critical. And just, we spoke a bit about factories now. I know last year Reju opened its research center in Frankfurt. You can just confirm that that's correct. How many factories do you have online, or facilities, should I say, are online at the moment?
Yeah. Yep, that's absolutely correct. We opened our R&D center in Frankfurt. And the reason we did it in Frankfurt is because, well, first of all, it's in the middle of Europe, which is convenient. Second thing is that that's where we also have our 10 Zimmer chemical engineers sit, so we can collaborate and cooperate with them on a daily basis. And the third reason was that we intended to build our first regeneration hub in Frankfurt, which we've now done. So interesting fact, we began building it in September last year, and we finished building it in July this year in 2024. So that's, I would think, a record in this industry in terms of going from nothing to a functioning regeneration hub in about 10 months' time. That's where we will now start to do the work in earnest. And that is, of course, also very exciting, because we know that we will now be able to, by early next year, actually deliver product from this hub. And on the back of that, we are now planning to build two new facilities at scale, large scale, one in North America and one in Europe, in the not too distant future. And when I say that, the plan right now is to have them operational by 27 or 28. And some of that will depend a little bit on the development work that we'll be doing in Frankfurt. But that is now something that, of course, we're excited about. I think the industry should be excited about, because we now are, you know, getting to the first early phase here of making sure that what has been so far done at lab scale is now going to, of course, go into more of a commercial size unit. It's always this way when you do these kind of technologies, that you go through different phases. What's unique about what we've done is that we've been able to do it so quickly. And that should give us pause and also optimism for what could be in the future as we continue this development down the line.
Yeah, definitely. And you just mentioned the industry. What we've seen is that sometimes, despite the advancements being made and the demand actually that there is for textile recycling, there's still some resistance or some problems with traction to actually have the buy-in that's necessary to take it to the next step. What do you think Reju is going to do differently to try and, get what you're doing to an industrialized scale where brands and it really everybody is buying into this initiative where in the past things haven't worked?
Well, I think, first of all, we're taking a holistic approach. So I mentioned a little bit some of the capabilities that we have. Well, we are able to, with the capabilities and the expertise that we have inside of our company, to work across the entire ecosystem. And it really is important to understand that even if you have the best technology in the world, that does not necessarily mean you're going to be successful. You actually have to work across the entire feedstock cycle, if you like, or the aspect of understanding how you will reverse logistically ensure that you're going to have feedstock, the right kind of feedstock for your regeneration. You also have to understand deeply downstream how brands actually operate. In other words, every brand, depending on whether it's in luxury, or sporting goods, outdoor, sportswear, it doesn't really matter. You need to understand that most likely all of them have somewhat of a different go-to-market in terms of their timelines, their manufacturing profile, you know, where they make the stuff, what they make, how they make it, etc. It's incredibly important to understand all of that so that when you actually do ask them to take what they have today and replace it with something new, it has to be a seamless effort, so to speak, right? You have to really understand how to work with their timelines, their go-to-market, to ensure that you're not being disruptive. That's one big hurdle, of course. I think the other hurdle for brands is what they see coming. And we all know that there will be regulation in many different ways for the industry going forward. It will have to be. If you look at it in the European context, of course, the European, especially through the Eurotex initiative and other things, are working very hard to make sure that the industry will adjust over time. So from a brand perspective, it's balancing what you do today with starting your transformation or your transition into what the regulation will be in the future. We all need to understand how will we pay for all of this. As I said when we started discussing our discussion here today, we're going from a system that is today half a century old. You know, it's a refined system that works, highly efficient. We need to build a new system that's going to cost money, and therefore we need to be able to pay for it. Now, some of the regulation is or should help with that. Things like EPR and producer responsibility, taxation, if you like, that is coming in, is actually meant to be used to pay for some of this infrastructure build, but not all of it will. So certainly there will be a premium to pay to work through this transition. The good news is much less than most people think. And why is that? Well, because first of all, and the most important thing is, you're not going to replace everything at once. You know, building these very large regeneration hubs of 50, 60, 70 kilotons takes time. You know, it takes about 3 years to build a factory, whether you have some strong partner like Technip in your back or not, simply because it'll take a year to do the permitting and about 2 years to build these large factories. And they cost a lot of money. You know, to build a large factory like that could cost anything from $150 to $300 million, depending on size and scale and location and what have you. That needs to be funded. And there's no funding that's going to take place unless the people that will fund it understand whether there's an offtake for the investment. But I think the good news, as I said, is that it will take time, right, to replace all of that quantity that every brand needs to ultimately replace. So there's an opportunity for us as an industry to work together to make sure that we mitigate the effect it might have. And one of the reasons we are excited about this is because we feel that we can actually make a better product. So if you take into consideration that you have a time aspect to this and the fact that we believe we can make better yarns, better fabrics that actually perform better for the end consumer and are more sustainable, doing those two things together, I believe will bring a more premium product also to market, which I think will help the brands to some extent in terms of how they think about their pricing policy, for sure, but also looking at other efficiencies, things like nearshoring that could also help, you know, offset things like transportation costs, looking at quicker turn, you know, other things in the actual entirety of the system that we're talking about. So it, again, coming back to the same thing, it isn't just one thing, right? It's many things. What I am excited about, having lived a life inside of this industry, is that I believe it can be done. I'm very optimistic about it, if you're willing to do the work. And I think I don't see any thing that, if I were a CEO today of a large apparel brand again, that I would not take on, because the actual impact to my own financials is actually so small. But if I think about it over time, what it could do to help out, both in terms of de-risking my own supply chain and my own future as a brand, but also to be a growth enabler, because if I'm not going to be able to get access to this kind of product in the future, how will I be able to grow with regulation and other hindrances that are being potentially or obstacles that might come in my way? So I am optimistic. I believe it can be done, but it will take like the old saying, it will take a village to get it done, for sure. And we here at Reju have on purpose staffed ourselves with some of the best people in the business to make sure that we can work across the ecosystem to be the facilitator and the connector to also help this work get going.
Yes, for sure. I'm really happy to hear that you're optimistic, because I think sometimes the more you know, the more you research, the more you think about each step and each stakeholder and player that has to buy in and do all these things that you've mentioned, it's sometimes easy to be overwhelmed and think just, you know, how is this going to happen? But I think what you've really touched on is it's going to take time, but it's time to start for everyone. And you have to look at the longer term picture. I mean, it's happening in the short term in terms of the legislation. Like, there are a few things already coming into play in January 2025, which is now less than 6 months away. So it's not a far away sort of imperative that brands and retailers and everybody has to look at. The legislation will take some time, but actually we have to start looking at the longer term picture and acting now. And you've touched on this throughout our conversation now, but what do you think is Reju's vision, and what is your vision for the future? Does Reju have a plan to be part of the secondary market? We've spoken big picture, but is there something else you'd like to say about textile-to-textile recycling and the circular economy in general? Basically, where do you see Reju in the next 5 to 10 years? Where is it going, and how can we, as an industry, support the vision?
Well, first of all, we have a vision. You know, Reju's vision is a world designed to last, and I think that's pretty fitting in terms of what we're undertaking. We're also a purpose-driven company, and we believe that our purpose is unlocking infinite possibilities within finite materials. And you know, to do that, there's a time, there's a scale that strategy comes with, for sure. You know, the only ask we really have from the industry is let's work together on a big project, because I think the industry has had a tendency, and this is just an observation from myself having been part of the industry for so long, to piecemeal things. And it's not for lack of trying. There's actually an enormous amount of enthusiasm for, let's say, sustainability in general out there. I think the industry realizes where we're at, and we want to do things to move things forward. But the reality is now we need a big effort on a big project. So why not take on the most difficult of them all, right? Take on the biggest problem that will have the most impact. And to be able to do that, we need to also come clean with an understanding of where the problem is. Today, you have two problems that are driving this, and also a very big benefit if we do it together. The two problems are the fact that we're using finite materials to create infinite waste. That's not a good model going forward. We can now, through new technology, use less carbon. And as a side note, our process uses about 50% less carbon emissions than if you use virgin. And I'm now talking about end-to-end. So this is not just our process. This is if you go from current infrastructure, taking oil out of the ground to polyester, or taking it from waste aggregation to polyester, we're 50% more efficient in terms of the carbon emissions. So to do this job holistically, we need to come together as an industry, and we need to actually face this together. And we should not be afraid to do so, because this will take time. So whether you have to adjust your supply chains, whether you have to pay a little more, whether you have to make an effort, you will have to do that over time. So this is something you can actually plan into. And that's how I would think about it if I were a CEO. I would say, okay, how do I buy myself a bit of insurance here? How do I make sure that I at least get going with this and I start? And this looks great because I can do it step by step. I can start by walking before I run. I can start by crawling maybe even before I walk. And that is really the approach the industry should take. And what I'm hoping we're going to be able to achieve with Reju is that pull the industry together, change the world together, and we're able to do that now with the technology that will unlock that ability. Now, again, the technology by itself isn't going to help anybody. It is just the unlock. We have to create and build this entire infrastructure platform, if you like, and system that now begins with a new raw material, which is textile. We have to work downstream to make better yarns, better fabrics, so that we pollute less in its second life and actually make it more durable. And also so that we can ensure that the consumer actually gets a benefit from this from a performance perspective. Well, how would they get that? Well, they will get it because we'll make yarns and fabrics that will shed less, that will be more comfortable, that will be more durable, so you can use them longer and preferably give them to someone else once you're done so that they can reuse it and rewear it. That's what we need to do as an industry. And I think Reju, with the vision that we have of a world designed to last, with the experience, capacity, capability, and financial horsepower that we have, will be able to at least initiate this. So I'm hoping 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, that we've been able to build regeneration hubs that are called hubs for a reason. They're not factories, they're not plants, because we're also intending to use these places for education, for places where the industry can come together, where we can demystify regeneration and make it something that people believe in, right? As one of the ways that we can make this world perhaps just a little bit better going forward.
Absolutely. Patrick, it has been an absolute pleasure hearing your insights on this, and your positivity is really infectious, leaving this on a really great note. So thank you very much for having been on the podcast today, and hopefully we get to see some more from Reju very soon. We'll be watching your journey closely.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Patrick. Be sure to give Reju a follow on their social media platforms as they grow, and stay ahead of some of the exciting announcements they have coming in the new year. To make sure you don't miss an episode of this show, subscribe to the Interline podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a follow on LinkedIn and Instagram. You'll also find much more about textile recycling, circularity, and sustainability in our newly released 2024 Sustainability Report. The report is completely ungated and free to read, and is essential reading for all fashion professionals wanting to understand the developing role that technology solutions are playing in changing the sustainability profile of fashion, and how far the industry still has to travel. Lastly, make sure you're subscribed to our weekly newsletter, where we give you our analysis on the biggest stories of the week in the world of fashion technology. I work on those breakdowns with the rest of the team here at the Interline, and we put a lot of thought each week into not only capturing the top headlines, but really analyzing them. You can access that newsletter on our website by clicking the newsletter icon in the top right corner of the screen, and it will be delivered straight to your inbox every Friday. Thanks for listening. See you next time.